When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to a new season of The Awardist, where we are chatting with the actors, creators, and more who are contenders this year and breaking down the state of the 2024 Emmys race. I'm Entertainment Weekly executive editor Jared Hall, and joining me to help kick things off is EWTV critic Kristen Baldwin. Hey, how are you?
I'm good, but I'm experiencing some severe deja vu.
Didn't we just do this? Yeah. In fact, we did. Mm-hmm. It was just, what, like 2.5, 3 short months ago, for the 2023 Emmys. Yeah, since they were in January. It's so weird. It felt like the longest award season ever because of that.
Yeah.
But I'm happy that we're like back on track that we, because even when those Emmys were happening, like The Bear was confusing people because people thought it was for season 2, but it was for season 1 and all that kind of stuff. But we're going to help everyone get their brains on the right track here, because there are like 472 shows and performances for us to sort through. Maybe double that, actually. But yeah, determine who's a contender. But also, we're going to be telling folks here about some folks who might be flying under the radar, but deserve the attention of voters. So certainly stay tuned for all of that. In fact, leading up to nominations here on the podcast, we're going to be featuring some folks who, of course, you might expect to be part of the race, but also some contenders who didn't get to do many, if any, interviews for their projects because of last year's double Hollywood strikes. So that'll be a nice little reminder that, oh, yes, there were all these things that came out during that, 4 or 5 month period. Mm-hmm. And I will say that is certainly the case for the hit, huge, enormous Amazon Prime Video movie, Red, White, and Royal Blue. That one debuted in the midst of those strikes. And today, our special guests are the stars of that movie, Nicholas Galitzine and Taylor Zakar Perez.
Aww. Two
of the, I mean, those guys are like, they're so huge on social media. They have such great fan bases, and they have a really hilarious, funny rapport with each other. I mean, as soon as we got on virtually to record that interview, they were like razzing each other. it was like a roast at the beginning of that interview. So they were a lot of fun, and they had a lot of great things to say. Before all of that, though, I want to let everyone know we have a fun little new bell and whistle, perhaps one of many to come, to tell all of you about. Because we do want to hear from you, our loyal listeners, we are encouraging you to call in. Yes, call on your phone to share your thoughts about our predictions. It's totally fine to disagree. We love to hear it. You can ask us questions about shows or performances. I was going to say, you know, you can ask anything. I mean, you can ask anything. We're not going to answer anything. I mean, you know, let's keep it about the awards, all that jazz. But here's that phone number that you can call in with your comments or questions. 657-799-1566. One more time for you. 657-799-1566. We'll also be sure to put that in the description of the podcast episode wherever you're listening so you can get it from there. All right. It is now time, Kristen, to get into predictions. We're talking about some early ones on the podcast today, because we got to start cutting through a bit of the clutter and tell all those loyal listeners I talked about who we think are the current top contenders. We're going to start with just a few categories this week. We are tackling outstanding drama, outstanding comedy, and outstanding limited or anthology series. So just those three today. Gosh, let's get into it, shall we? You want to start with drama?
Let's start with drama, the big one.
All right, let's start with drama. Let's get into it. At this stage of the game, we don't know yet how many nominees there will be because all of the shows have not yet been submitted, and the number of nominees is determined by the number of submissions.
I said 8.
So we are going to offer up, for now, 8, because there were 8 nominees last year, and we'll go from there. And if we find out that there are going to be fewer, then we'll adjust. But Kristen, please tell us who you think right now those eight nominees will be?
All right. So I'll start with the least surprising, and that's The Crown. Obviously, season six, nominated every season. So now that we have some room in this category with Succession and Better Call Saul over and some other nominees that are frequently, in the mix, like House of the Dragon, Last of Us, Yellow Jackets, they're not eligible for this period. Right. So we have some openings. So first one, I'm going to say, goes to Gilded Age. It did just get a SAG Award nomination for Ensemble. So I think it's finally catching on, this glorious Gilded Age. Pleasure of a show starring like so many incredible actors. I love it so much. Moving on, Slow Horses. I think this season, I don't know, I've heard more people talking about Slow Horses. Like word of mouth, I think, has reached critical mass. And Gary Oldman actually got a Golden Globes nomination for actor in for this most recent season. So I think it's starting to, you know, pick up. And so I think that could go.
I was going to say pick up steam or pick up gas. It's a whole joke. It's a whole thing on the show.
A lot of fart jokes. If you haven't watched it and you like fart humor, go for it. But it's also, you know, a good police drama. So it's a mix. Also putting in there The Morning Show, you know, because the actors are regularly nominated. But again, now that we have a wider field, I think it'll creep up into a series. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, from Amazon Prime. This, you know, had really strong debut and good reviews, and the stars are well known. Maya Erskine and Donald Glover, well known to the voters. Fallout, which you may not have heard much about yet, but this is coming mid-April on Prime Video. It's an adaptation of the video game Blockbuster franchise. I am not a post-apocalyptic, you know, video game person, but I loved the first four episodes. I thought it was great.
Okay.
And finally, I'm going to say Three Body Problem. The reviews were mixed. It's obviously a very ambitious adaptation of the book, but it's the Game of Thrones guys. So I think Netflix is going to put a big push behind it. And I think that'll slip in there as well. And then last but not least, I think The Curse, which is the very weird but critically revered Showtime series starring Nathan Fielder and Emma Stone. I don't think that many people watched it, but it, you know, it certainly was noticed by the town. It, you know, got a Golden Globe nomination for Emma, Indie Spirit nomination, Writers Guild nomination. And, you know, it was really good, even though it was really bizarre. So I do think that's with this wide open field, it's going to slip in there as well.
Yeah, it's one of those that you really have to see it through to the end of the season. It kind of earns your time, because at that point you're like, I gotta know what
now
the heck is going
know.
On
yeah.
here what's
yeah.
gonna happen yeah so like you said, there are so many good ones. I'm gonna just kind of mention some of the others that are hoping and looking for nominations. Sugar, The New Look, Hijack, Ahsoka, Tokyo Vice. So there are a lot of shows that are hoping to make that final cut. Also, because as you said, like, let's look at last year's list of nominees. Only one of the eight are eligible, because like you said, Better Call Saul is done. Succession is done. Yellow Jackets, The White Lotus, The Last of Us, House of the Dragon, and Andor don't even have new seasons. So yeah, that just leaves The Crown. I do think, by the way, I don't know if I'm kind of alone in this. I don't know how you felt about the last season of The Crown. I thought six was better than five.
I liked the first part of six.
Though
I wasn't loving Ghost Diana, but I did think that whole storyline was good. I didn't love the second half. But I do think, especially since there's so many openings and fresh blood that voters are going to be, you know, contending with, I think something as very dependable and, you know, well done as The Crown is going to, you know, get nominated again in this and in other categories. But yeah, I do think this last season was, got, you know, was certainly divisive.
For sure. Do you think it's perhaps the one to beat right now just because of its history?
That's an interesting. Ooh. Yeah. I think it could go to that, or I think it could go to slow horses. Like, I really do think there's like a slow horses revolution happening.
A slow and it could horse, just be in, slow momentum, but built, yeah.
It could just be because, you know, my husband is one of the many people who kind of came to it late, but I do think, you know, the people who have discovered it and caught up on it, you know, now it's got 3 seasons. People are really loving it. But yeah, the Crown would certainly be the easiest vote for voters who maybe haven't seen all these other things, but I do hope
familiarity
that
sometimes rules the day.
But I do hope that, and it's the final season, you know, that that's sentimental, but I do hope that voters will really dive into their job this year and check out a lot of stuff.
One would hope. You mentioned Fallout, that it is a video game adaptation. And here's the thing. A lot of people who watched and loved The Last of Us did not know that it was a video game adaptation. And I think HBO very strategically tried to avoid talking about that. When you were watching Fallout, did you feel like you were watching a video game adaptation?
No, I mean, I wouldn't have known it was a video game unless somebody had told me. And, you know, certainly I know nothing about the video game. And you know what I really liken it to in terms of tone and in terms of what I, you know, just really enjoying it, even though it was a world that I knew nothing about. The tone's a little more not upbeat, but there's a little bit more humor than this, but Watchmen. Like Watchmen was one where, you know, it's got sort of absurdist humor, but really serious themes and also, you know, a great cast and a real sort of very intricate universe that you're stepping into that you either know everything about or you know nothing about. You know, there's no in between. But in the, you know, as with Watchmen, you know, I went in blind and I'm really enjoying it so far. I've seen 4. I think it's really great.
Okay. And The Morning Show, I will say, I think,
sorry,
I mean, look, that show is, it is, I can't not watch it.
I know.
Right? It's I will say, I think there were some really great performances this season. Greta Lee, especially, I thought had some great stuff. That scene in the restaurant with the server and the
that whole thing was so uncomfortable.
Right. But yeah, what are your feelings on that? I think I like season 3 better than 2.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. I think honestly, it's a show that like it's sort of like the Gilded Age, which is like very soapy and silly and over the top. but you know, you love it because it's just delectable and the performances are incredible and the costumes are gorgeous. Yeah. With The Morning Show, it's silly and soapy and over the top, but very serious. And, but still great cast. Everybody's really committed, you know, like I love a good soap. And so I think even though it's often, even though the show often kind of veers off into like a, you know, crazy town, you've got such a great cast. They really commit and they make it work. So, you know, if as long as there's no like dramedy slash guilty pleasure category in the Emmys, I think it belongs here.
All right. Let's have some laughs. Let's talk about comedy series. I'll go ahead and note up front, kind of like drama, there are a lot of last year's nominees who were not in the mix because Barry is done. Jury Duty. Well, that was one season. Yeah, we don't know if it's going to come back. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is done. Ted Lasso is quote unquote done. They've not said it was the series finale, but they also haven't said they're going back into production. And Wednesday is not eligible because they don't have a new season yet. So that means returning are Abbott Elementary, The Bear, and Only Murders in the Building. Safe to say you think all 3 of those will be nominees again?
Yeah, absolutely. And then I do think we're going to get season 3 of Hacks, which will drop prior to the end of the eligibility window.
Yep, early May.
New season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. God help us all.
New and final So
final, absolutely.
This
yeah.
is the last chance. Yeah.
And it gets nominated pretty much every season, I think all but one. What We Do in the Shadows, I think will actually slip back in. It's been nominated twice, but it's kind of been crowded out in recent years. I think it'll get back in. Reservation Dogs, it's going to happen this year. It's the final season. Everybody knows it's
my fingers are crossed.
You
here.
Know, it's like on, you know, the top of best of, you know, 2023, 2024 lists all the time. And finally, I'm a Virgo, Prime Video, which is the Boots Riley sort of absurdist satire about capitalism and coming of age, starring Jarrell Jerome as a 13-foot tall teenager. completely bizarre, but I loved it.
Fun fact, Jarrell is actually only 12 foot tall, so they had to make him. No, I'm kidding. That would be absurd.
That would be amazing.
And just to kind of run through some of the others that are hoping to get in there, Palm Royale, The Gentleman, which is the series adaptation of Guy Ritchie's movie. Mm-hmm. He's also behind the series. The Return of Frasier, they're hoping to get in there. I'm not really sure. The new season of Girls 5 Eva, that show has moved from Peacock to Netflix. I don't know yet. I don't even know if Netflix knows yet if that move is having a real impact on viewership.
Yeah.
It might be one of those things that people are like, what is this show? And they're going all the way back to the beginning, starting with season one to watch, because it's not really a show I think you can jump right in at season three. And you know, there's the Connors, Ghosts, Righteous Gemstones. So there are some good comedies.
Yeah.
But again, we think there'll only be eight slots if we're going according to last year. So kind of what I was saying earlier that, you know, a lot of people felt like the Emmy win earlier this year for The Bear was for season two. It was actually for season one.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, kind of same question to you about The Crown, do you feel like this is the one to beat?
I really do. In this case, I really do, because The Bear season two was, you know, excellent. And, you know, part of the reason The Bear season one won so many Emmys, not that it wasn't a great season on its own, but people were just riding high off of that incredible season two.
Yeah.
I think it is the one to beat, you know, but certainly we've got a long campaign ahead of us. You know, Abbott Elementary is always a great contender. What We Do in the Shadows will have one more season, so I'm hoping that it'll get another chance to win. You know, I would love for Reservation Dogs to win, but I think this is maybe the situation where the nomination is the win.
Is the right, exactly. Interesting thing as well with The Bear, as we've talked about here oftentimes, we talk about it with fellow reporters, journalists. It's not a comedy. It is a dramedy. But that, of course, was also the case with Barry.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard someone try to argue that Hacks is a dramedy. It's way more comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, the show is about a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
I have also now, going back to my original point about The Bear, I'm putting my hands over my mouth to be a little quiet. I've heard some publicists saying the same thing now about The Bear, being a little more open in their conversations when they're like, yeah, we're trying to get our show in there because, you know, that one dramedy is going to get the, is a lock. So I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it feels like more people are starting to like openly acknowledge it. But again, the big question becomes, with a shrug, what to do?
Because, I mean, you know what to do. You launch a dramedy category. There's certainly enough. And it would, you know, if we want to be purists, we could certainly, free up, you know, there'd be plenty of other comedies that could get in the mix if things like The Bear, which is an excellent show and deserves to be recognized, you know, had its own category. But I know, you know, dramedy isn't even really a word. So like, you know, it would be a lot for the Academy to make that shift.
Yep, it sure would. And I guess on one hand, I would also think if they did that, it would be a much smaller field. You know, they might have like 30 shows, maybe.
And I guess, you know, it would have to be left up to the, you know, the shows themselves where they would want to submit. And it could certainly be, you know, a tool for gaming the system, you know, how sometimes shows switch from one category to another, limited series to drama, comedy to drama, vice versa, you know, in an effort to have a better shot. So all those things would come with a new category, but I do think it would, you know, maybe level the playing field for, you know, some of the more straightforward comedies out there.
Indeed. All right. So we have saved what I kind of think is the big category for last, because it feels like where all the prestige TV is really living. Not that, not to take anything away from all those great dramas and comedies, though we normally see dramas in limited or anthology series. That's the category we're talking about here. Last year, there were five nominees in this category. Of course, none of them are eligible again because it was a one-time go. So, Kristen, drumroll, what do you think those five nominees could be this year?
All right. Well, I think the only thing we can say for certain is Shogun, the sort of remake of that NBC miniseries that is excellent. It's on FX and, you know, gotten glowing reviews. Also, new season of Fargo was very well received and deserves it. Sorry to Nick Pizzolatto, but I do think True Detective Night Country is going to get its own slot. And I think it deserves it. Lessons in Chemistry on Apple TV Plus with Brie Larson, adaptation of the book. I wasn't a huge fan, but I, you know, it was well done and looked beautiful, and it was a very popular book, and she's a big star. And finally, for the last one, I'm going to say Fellow Travelers for Showtime. There are a lot who could go in this category, in this last slot, but I thought Fellow Travelers was really well received, got a lot of attention, and Matt Bomer and Jonathan Bailey were excellent in it. Yeah. So I think that's going to get the last slot, but there are plenty others that might, you know, Ripley, Masters of the Air, Griselda, The Regime, although I don't know why The Regime is showing up in this mix, other than, look, Kate Winslet, I love her, but this was not a good show. It didn't get, it was not well, you know, she did her best, but it wasn't good. Anyway, it's in the mix.
Mayor of Easttown, it is not.
No. And I think also Eric, which a lot of people probably haven't heard of yet. That's the Netflix limited series starring Benedict Cumberbatch. So there are plenty of yet to be sort of premiered miniseries, limited series that could end up, you know, upending this current list.
Yeah. The Sympathizer, that's another one that hasn't even aired yet. I mean, gosh, I just looking at this list. I mean, Mary and George debuts this weekend. Nicholas Galitzine, our guest on the show today, along with Julianne Moore. I will say I've watched all of that and I liked it quite a bit. The performances are great. Of course, it's a period piece, so costumes and all that stuff are outstanding. I know there's a bit of a push right now on the publicity side. I've not had a chance to see episodes yet. I don't know if you have for Under the Bridge, which is the Riley Keogh and Lola Gladstone
series. I'm looking forward to that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Michael Douglas stars as Benjamin Franklin in Franklin. I don't know what to make of that one just yet. And then Black Mirror, there was a new season of that. So yeah, I mean, limited series. I just keep scrolling here and I just keep looking at all these shows that I've, some of them I've heard a lot of people talk about. Some I only kind of heard a little bit, but they were certainly part of, you know, you saw the PR campaigns and you knew that they were on.
Yeah.
So it gets interesting.
It will get interesting. I definitely think, you know, we can expect Shogun. We can expect Fargo. I'm pretty sure we can expect True Detective. But, you know, and maybe there will be so many that we'll get six nominees. You know?
Right. That's true. That is a very good point. That is very possible as well. Oh, The Tattooist of Auschwitz. That's another one that hasn't aired
Veil.
Yet. We were the lucky ones, just started. My gosh. So yeah, there's a big list here. Kristen, what I did notice that you did not say that you think has a chance, The Idol.
I mean, honestly, I'm so thrilled to learn that it's like submitted or considered a limited series. I mean, truly, you know, it was on my worst list of worst TV. It was a mess that I watched every last minute of. I would kind of love to see The Weeknd nominated just because it would be incredible to have a performance that objectively terrible get recognized. But, you know, I think we'll just, that's something that we're going to have to, you know, hold on to in our hearts. And but I'm not sure that it's going to make it come anytime.
Yeah, probably not. I do want to note also, by the way, your dog is there. I'm wondering if Betty has any opinions on on limited series.
Well, Betty is currently eating something under the bed, so I think
she has more important things to worry about.
She's not concerned.
All right, fair enough. Okay, so those folks are Kristen's early predictions this stage, early April, for Outstanding Drama, Outstanding Comedy, and Outstanding Limited or Anthology Series. And you can also check out UW.com for that full breakdown of everything. We are going to take a break here in just a second, but before we go, Kristen, I would love to know who you think ought to get a nod this year.
In any category?
In any category.
All right. Well, then I'm gonna you know, do a little Hail Mary for drama series and say that I really think Apple TV's Criminal Record deserves a shot. It was this very, you know, intense but unfussy police thriller starring Peter Capaldi and Cush Jumbo. And I mean, honestly, for the amount of money that Apple has spent on a lot of impressively mediocre programming, I think this was an incredible show that probably cost, you know, 1/8 of Palm Royale's wig budget. And I just, it was just great police mystery storytelling with two incredible performances at the center. So give it a watch.
All right. Well, check out that one, folks. And of course, Kristen will be back during the season, so we're going to get more of those from you. Now, truly, before we go to break, I'm going to remind you that phone number, because we would love to hear from you, your comments, your thoughts on these predictions, or anything else in the episode. Questions, if you have those. That number is 657-799-1566. 657-799-1566. All right, folks, do not go anywhere, I beg and plead. Red, White, and Royal Blue stars Nicholas Galitzine and Taylor Zakhar Perez are coming up next on The Awardist. We will be right back. Welcome back to The Awardist, everyone. All right, it is now time for the main event, and I gotta say, I'm so thrilled that these two are helping us kick off 2024 Emmy season here on the podcast. Joining me now are the two stars of one of last year's most talked about movies, Red, White, and Royal Blue, Nicholas Galitzine and Taylor Zakhar Perez. By the way, also a bit of a mouthful, those names, you guys, but welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I see what you did there.
Yeah,
Jared.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was not subtle. It was low hanging fruit.
I wasn't trying to be, so I'm glad. Yeah, yeah. I wanted to make sure all the fans picked up. You know, we might have some full puns going on in this entire interview. So we'll see how that works out. But thanks so much for joining me. How are you guys?
I'm great. I'm fantastic. Happy to be here. Happy to see both your faces.
I am not happy to see Taylor's face, but I am happy to be here.
Oh boy. Well, maybe we'll just put up a piece of paper on that screen.
I know, I was
screen.
Trying to see if I can, like, take him off.
Hide him? Yeah, hide participants? Yeah, there you go. Yeah, one of those kinds of things.
I have a post-it I'll put over your face, Nick.
Easy enough, see? We're making this all work out just fine. I got to say, though, this really, like, it feels like such a great insight window into the relationship that you guys developed over the course of this film, which I feel like I completely understand why. And we'll get into some of those specifics a bit later. But I want to start here because, you know, the film debuted on August 11th. At that point, we were about a month into the actor's strike. And I know you guys were able to do a few interviews prior to that starting, but you didn't really get to do, like, the full promotional tour like we usually see for a film, much less get to, like, publicly celebrate its success and interact with fans who were, I mean, really going crazy for it on, you know, Instagram and TikTok. But I have to assume, obviously, you guys were seeing a lot of that. Were you talking and, you know, sharing all of that with each other privately?
I generally speaking, being online, like, scares me quite a lot. But I remember us, like, kind of dipping into it and then being like, oh, it's good. And then, like, I kind of, like, going away. But, I mean, you know, just to this day, it's pretty amazing to see the resonance it's been able to have.
Yeah, it was a little scary because you're like, if a tree falls and the woods doesn't make a sound. And that's kind of what it felt like when the movie came out, because we're like, okay, it's out, but we can't do much about it. And so we just kind of had to wait, like Nick was saying. And so the amount of text message links I got about, you know, reviews or interviews or just fan responses were nonstop. And so I kind of, as Nick was saying, left it to my nearest and dearest to kind of inform me on the film's success.
Yeah. let others be kind of a filter for you. That's fair. I appreciate that and respect that. Is it fair to say this is one of those like phenomenons that did you see your social media followings grow in the process?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nodding heads. Yeah, yeah. It happened.
Yeah, we did. I think we were texting each other like, mate.
Yeah. Like, what is going on?
Yeah. I feel like we had a nice base from both of the films that we did before. Yeah. And mm-hmm. then you just saw this uptick in following and you're like, oh, wow, this movie really struck a chord. And that was a great barometer to see how well it was doing, I guess.
The thing I think is so cool, special, however you two want to categorize it, is that, you know, all these months later, fans are they're catching up with each of you outside of events to autograph books or photos. And there's this whole thing going on right now on social media where we see like you two are signing over each other's faces or drawing little mustaches.
I want to step in here. I want to step in here because I did not know that this was happening. Until I saw this in person and someone told me they were doing it. This little fucker over here, he's disrespecting my body of work. He's disrespecting me as a human being. And so I retaliated. So I just want to make that very clear.
I mean, someone has to strike first, right? And then it's just a response.
Taylor, what possessed you? What have you got against me?
I honestly have nothing against you. I think the fans just are always excited when, you know, a new piece of magazine or some new photograph comes out. And I don't know, I feel like it's indicative of kind of who we are as people, but who we are as characters in the project, that we do just kind of mess with each other and one up each other. And so when I saw our face in the GQ, I probably signed 100 of them. And so by like the 101st, I was like, you know what? This could be really fun.
And now it feels rude to like not sign on each other's faces. You know, it's like, I feel like that's what people want when they show up with books and stuff now.
Yeah. Well, but also I think that it kind of speaks to a bit. I mean, you know, what does it mean to you guys that fans have supported and loved the two of you in the way they have as, you know, their Prince Henry and first son, Alex?
Take it, Nick.
Okay. I mean, it's very overwhelming. I mean, I feel very humbled by it. And there are so many wonderfully talented people in this industry, and there's so many wonderfully talented people who'd love to do the job that we do. And you know, when you make something that has this sort of seismic shift in your career, I just think, you know, I don't want to speak for Taylor here, but I just think we feel very, very humbled by it. And to be honest, just more than the signings or the photos or anything, I just really love, you know, chatting to people on the street about this movie and you know, oftentimes how positively it's affected their life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will second that, because the amount of folks that come up to me and tell me, oh, when I read the book, I was this close to taking my own life, or when I saw your film, it made me not want to kill myself anymore. And those are the moments that are really important to me, because I do, and my friends will tell you, my family, like, I'll stop on the street with somebody and chat with them for 5 to 10 minutes. And like, we're completely en route to somewhere and have to be somewhere. But when somebody stops me, I'm like, this movie means so much to people and to me and to like everybody who made it, hopefully, but that I like, do want to lend an ear and hear their story, because, you know, at the end of the day, it is a love story. And I think that's why they're falling in love with it. You know, I think it's also a testament to Casey's brilliance as a writer. And then they gave us the book, and there was such a huge groundswell of support for it. And so, you know, Nick and I knew going into it that we had some tough shoes to fill.
But I think people think you did it quite well. As you said, you know, it's a love story. There's, you know, romantic comedy elements even here. Like, there's some very funny scenes, but perhaps a little cheese, but like the right amount of cheese, a really good cheese, you know. But like you're saying, it does deal with some very real things as it relates to, like the impact of coming out and labels and perceptions. What were the conversations like behind the scenes about how you guys could bring a new point of view and something unique to the table? Because there are a lot of movies that are coming out stories, but this one, it felt different.
Yeah, we had tons of conversations surrounding this. And I feel like with queer cinema in itself, it's like some of the major themes are, you know, personal identity and exploration, empathy and understanding, and definitely challenging stereotypes. And going into this film, we were really all in this major agreement. I obviously, the book also speaks for itself, but you know, the book is celebrated for its positive and nuanced representation of, you know, the queer community and characters and relationships. And so we just knew that going into this, we're like, this is going to be contributing to its popularity and impact is that positive representation. So we just kind of, it was kind of nonstop conversations and discussions about this, right, Nick?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think we just wanted to create something that felt just very new and fresh and wholesome and funny and that had a heart to it. And I think, you know, it was just everyone just felt very, very aligned, I think, in terms of the creative, top to bottom, you know, whether it be Taylor and I or Matthew and Casey and the amazing producers, the music on the film. I mean, it felt there was just a really great sense of community, I think, established on this job, which was
totally,
yeah, very fulfilling.
Yeah. Was your, I mentioned earlier, we'd have lots of puns here. Was that when you said top to bottom, was that one? I'm kidding. I didn't mean to make light. It was a very serious answer there. Yeah. So in the midst of all of that, that we're talking about, there is of course intimacy because it's a love story. We gotta have that. Trust, of course, is vital between co-stars, but I'd imagine a bit more when that kind of stuff is involved. So did you guys make a point of hanging out, having dinner, whatever that might mean, to develop and build that between you? Or did it, was it just kind of inherently there already?
I mean, I think it was, Taylor and I have talked about this a lot, but like, you know, I remember the first few minutes of rehearsal, I was like, oh, this guy's my friend. Like, this guy is going to be a buddy. Like, we have the same sense of humor. It's very yes and we just really, really got on, and I think that just this like inherent sense of trust came with that, and a sense of responsibility of wanting to make something great. But you know, that's not to say we didn't have great people like Robbie Taylor Hunt, who was our intimacy coordinator, who, funnily enough, I've worked with twice now. And oh, wow. And he's like my guy now, seeing as that's basically my thing is just doing intimate work on camera. But he I think very much helped give us the he helped us refine the sort of the choreography of all the intimacy in a way. But you know, why don't you speak to this, Taylor? I just feel like we really just had a care for each other and a trust with each other. And you know, it's so fun now seeing my mate at all these awards and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, it's a closeness in a project like this, I think, is required.
Yeah. I think someone asked me on, I was at the Vanity Fair party. They're like, who's a better kisser, Joey or Nick? And it took me by surprise because legitimately it's such work, you know, that it doesn't even go into that territory for us, that you're like, oh, yeah, I guess, I don't know how to answer that question, you know, because like the actual romance there is not there. It's like, it's all, you know, as if. And so when they actually ask you the real life questions, I always like choke up. I'm like, I have no idea. You know, it just was like a dance that we choreographed for 2 weeks. Yeah. What Nick was saying, like when we first, our chem read first, and then we met like a week later. And I think we were really lucky that, you know, Matthew comes from the theater. So we had a solid week of rehearsals together, going over scene by scene with the different characters. And usually on set, you'll get 1 or 2 days to maybe just read through it with the director. And with us, Amazon really allowed Matthew to have time with us. And because of the subject matter and because how important this book is and how beloved it is, I know that, you know, he wanted to get it right. And mm-hmm. Nick and I knew that going into it. We're like, okay, buddy, like we're in this, no messing around. We're like having fun, of course, because like the best part of acting is like, is the fun and the work. But we just knew that we were representing something way bigger than ourselves.
Yeah. Were there any moments that were perhaps then improvised between the two of you because of that connection and bond that you formed?
God, well, I mean, I feel like in all the sort of the scenes that have bounce, you know, there's just like I think the storage closet, there was a lot of like funny physicality in that, and also trying to make the space seem smaller than it actually was, because we actually had a lot of room, to be honest, and we had to kind of make it seem even more and more cramped. But I don't know, Tay, what would you say, mate?
I feel like I think as you said in an interview we did together, like script is Bible, right? Even though it was adapted to a screenplay from a book. And so we really, and also Matthew being a playwright, he was very honest about the lines and being word perfect. And so I feel, and also Nick and I couldn't be any different than our characters. I think I think Alex is just, he's like a cannonball when he comes into a room, and Nick's character is a bit more reserved. And so we really had to click into that. And I think I was able to be more goofy on set before setups. And sometimes Nick would have to be a bit more, you know, ready for the scene and in like a more serious manner. And so I feel like we got our kicks in like the hair and makeup trailer, like joking with each other and like, and holding. But like when we were on set, it really felt like, not that there was no room to improvise. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, Nick. It just felt like there was such weight and depth to the lines already that we were like, okay, if you say it in a different way, it might mean something else to the audience. And it's so important to get this message across, or this is the meaning of this scene. And this is how the characters and the story arcs.
And, you know, I don't think it's not a negative thing to say that, you know, you have different directors and different director writers. And like Taylor was saying before, Matthew coming from screen, from playwriting, I mean, words are his sort of almost principal concern in the sense. And so he wrote the script very, very specifically. And so, you know, you want to give justice to that. I think you want to credence to that. So,
yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Sarah Shahi, I gotta say, she gets a bit of an eyeful at once. I mean, I guess audiences do too. But anyone who watched Minx, well, yeah. But yeah, my question here, what was the scene when she walks in on you guys? I mean, Nicholas, you're like, you know, tucked away in a closet or whatever. Taylor, you run out into the room. Was that all planned out? Is there a conversation on the day about like what state of undress she finds you guys in? How's that work?
I will take this one.
Yeah.
Sarah is a whirlwind when she comes into the room. And
she's funny too.
She's hysterical. And I love working with her. We both loved working with her. And she comes in with this plan. She's like, all right. She's like, I'm going to walk in and I'm going to see him there. And I'm going to walk here and I'm going to do this and I'm going to spin and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And, you know, Nick and I had just run our, you know, the kind of the beginning or end of a scene that we shot in there. And then Sarah comes in and we just kind of see her do her thing and we laugh because we're like, there's not that much room in here. You're not doing any of that. But we all kind of make eye contact and she does it. We do a run through and she goes, huh, well, that's not going to work, is it? And so we, everything kind of, because we shot in, you know, hotel rooms, in apartments, and you're in confined spaces and different camera setups, I think that was a Steadicam, I think, the entire time, because the space was so small. And so moving was very difficult. And so when it comes to the states of undress, that was the day that I think Matthew said in an interview that I had questions about my butt, and I did, because I'm like, this is the day. This is the big day. I have questions. What's it going to look like? And, you know, like on other projects I've done, they've always like, you know, they've like digitally removed certain things. And I'm like, okay. And so then you become a little self-conscious. You're like, is this not look good? What's wrong with this? You know?
Right.
And so, yes, those conversations are had. I would say like the day before, and like with like hair and makeup, with the director, with the producers, like who's feeling comfortable, who's not. I mean, I think Nick, what you had, what in Bottoms, you had you just came out in a jock strap.
Yeah. And we won't even go into Mary and George because that's his own special.
Yeah. Indeed. I got to tell you guys, one of the things I love about the movie so much is the how the text exchanges play out in bed versus like seeing phone screens all the time. Was there anything tricky, I guess is the word I'll use, about like making that work?
I mean, in what sense? Just from a sort of a performance standpoint?
Performance, but just in terms of, you know, taking what, you know, everyone knows to be text messages, but turning it into more like a, you know, person-to-person, face-to-face conversation.
I feel like that was a Matthew thing, because
quite
a conversation I remember hearing. They're like, we don't want it to be the typical, you know, Zoom in on the phone. We want it to be a bit more interactive and fun, and I do know, like, for camera setups, you'd be like, hey, we need to have you all the way to the left because the text is going to appear on the right. So that I do know that was some technical conversations that were had.
Yeah, that makes sense. Got to be on the correct side of the movie screen because of the TV or because of the phone screen. Totally makes sense. Filming in London's Victoria and Albert Museum. I mean, I can't imagine how incredible that was, but I know something that fans were so excited about too, was because that you both say in person versus an email when you say history, huh? Like little things like that, all these little touches. At what point did you discover that those were things, like what the things were that fans were most excited to see play out in the film?
Well, I mean, the cake was like, you know, I think that was the big one, right? Like that's just such a visceral scene. And, you know, Matthew, coming from his theater background, obviously wanted it sort of completely planned like Abbott and Costello.
Nah.
And so there are a lot of kind of choreography and timing and everything went into that. And obviously a lot of it that relies on camera movement and everything. So, and that was pretty early on in the filming process as well. So I'd say that's the one that jumps to mind for me. Don't know about you, Taylor.
The cake is, I think, what, the cover of the book. And that was a particularly tough one for me because the comedy and stuff was so much fun that we rehearsed that. But my dog passed away the night of the first day of filming. And then we had the second day of filming that scene. And so I come back, I find out my dog passes away. And then I text Matthew and Nick. I'm like, hey guys, I'm going to be strictly professional tomorrow. I'm going to be fine. But like, I'm just going to probably be a little different because I'm, you know, a 10-hour flight from the dog that just passed away. And then I get there, everybody's looking at me with these sad eyes. I'm like,
fuck,
what's wrong? And then they're like, we're so sorry. We're so sorry. I'm like, did you guys send a company-wide email? Like telling everybody about this? Like everyone's like, would you like some tea? Do you need some tea, Taylor? I'm like, I'm okay. Thank you. And I was like, well, now I have to be good. Now I have to be okay. But the cake scene was major. It was just so much fun. I mean, we rehearsed with what did we rehearse with? Icing at the, I don't even know which rehearsal.
The glass and everything. But yeah, for you, it was more for you as well, because so much of the technicality relied on your getting the icing, putting it on the shoulder at the right time, the cup. Like it was so like not natural in a lot of ways. So I mean, given, you know, the fucking shit show that you had to, the emotional shit show that you kind of had to go through. I mean, it was so impressive how well you handled all that.
Thanks. I do know that, you know, there'll be stills of the country house or something, or there'll be like the Victoria and Albert Museum. And, you know, as an American, you know, I grew up in Chicago. We have the Field Museum, Museum of Science mm-hmm. Industry, Planetarium. Like those are so America to me, or, you know, yeah. the Planetarium here in Griffith Park. And so I kind of take them for granted where I don't know, Nick, did you, I mean, you probably grew up going to the V&A Museum and you're like, oh yeah, I've never been here after dark. This is cool, but this is another day in London for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was very, very cool. I mean, very impactful and special to be able to do that.
The access.
I'm trying to remember if we shot sort of anywhere else. I mean, we shot in some amazing locations, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
But running through the museum, because, you know, it's like you're a giant library, right? And so when they're like, hey, sun's coming up, they're like, run across these just ancient marble statues. And you're like, okay, yeah, cool. And it's almost like you're ready to get caught doing something wrong. And so just kind of, we were able to take some liberties at places that, you know, the everyday person passing by or going to, it just didn't happen for them. So I'm definitely grateful for that. And the manors we got to go to, we went to
where Kensington Palace was supposed to be. Yeah, that was remember that was the week after I got COVID as well. So like it was this week where we had like the emotional scene in Kensington Palace. We had Red Room. We had like all of this stuff. Where was that again though? I always forget.
Bournemouth.
Yes, it was in Bournemouth because we were all staying in that hotel together. Wow. Yeah. That was a tough week.
Yeah. Well,
so you were in Kensington Palace filming?
No. We were. We were in some stately home in Bournemouth down near the coast. Yeah.
In this beautiful rundown manor mm-hmm. next to a witchcraft shop. And, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, as Americans, we look at like when our architecture began versus mm-hmm. when the United Kingdom's architecture began. Yeah. And you're just such a huge difference. You're like, wow, we're really stunted on history over here when you compare it to our friends across the pond.
Yeah, indeed. Well, guys, I know a lot of people are asking you about the potential for a sequel. Of course, there's got to be a story. But do you even know, is anyone thinking about or working on a potential story?
Go on, Taylor.
Go on. I'm over here like glazed over because this is the question I get
I know.
Every day of my life. Jared. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
That's why I was trying to offer it up to you in a different way.
But no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, because I met Jared, Nick, I met Jared at SCAD.
At SCAD, on a panel, yeah.
And he asked me then, and I was like, I have no idea. And then asked me again at the SAG Awards. And I don't get annoyed with that. I'm totally messing with you. I am not sure yet. You know, I think on previous projects that I did when there was, you know, already a film in the can and then you hear about the announcement of a sequel or something, mm-hmm. That's when we become privy to it. But personally, no. I'm waiting for Casey to announce the second book. You know, like I'm assuming that that's what the film would be based off of, kind of like a Francis Ford Coppola and
Mario Puzo.
Yep. Yeah, so I feel like that would be that would be the way that I would love it for it to happen.
Yeah. Right, because Casey's the one who's built up this world, so it makes sense.
Yeah, I would love for the fourth material to be there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yeah, because Matthew got the opportunity to adapt it, but Casey is the brain behind this world and these characters, and you would want Casey's touch in there mm-hmm. because they're so smart and kind and just sees, you know, this world is such a what-if world, and... Mm. To have another one of those films like this that had such a great response and in countries where it's quite literally illegal to be queer in these countries, it was number one on Amazon. So you know that throughout the world, what there's 8 billion people, there's 8% of them identify as LGBTQIA+. You're like, that's 640 million people that are watching this, hopefully, right? You know, like you would love to affect that many people. And then the community around them, I think it's just as important for those a part of the community and those that are not part of the community to watch this project and just learn something, enjoy it, laugh. And that's, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's what you guys said, you know, it's had a big impact. You've been fortunate enough to read some of that and see, you know, some of the, have conversations with people about that. So, so congratulations on that and truly appreciate both of your guys' time. Congratulations on this.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jared.
Appreciate it. Yeah,
well, those guys, Taylor, I got to say, I had been seeing Taylor all through award season. So he and I kept like catching up with each other. I felt like every week we were becoming like weekly, like, oh, you're following me again, that kind of thing. But it is funny to hear them talking about people who actually are kind of following them. I don't mean in a stalkery way, but the people who are having them autograph things, and those guys have like figured out a way to communicate with each other, but also have some fun in the process. And fans have really, I love seeing something like this where fans have made something so much bigger than it's not just about these two guys. It's about the story and how much they love it and are getting from it.
And it, you know, they bond with other people over it and become, you know, a little community. And we love that, you know, so it's special when it's, you know, and it's so sweet and nice. Like this, we need more of this in our, 100%. In our lives right now.
Yeah. The fans are kind of, defining the legacy mm-hmm. of this project. And that to me is really cool. I mean, of course it's a great story. And like you said, we need more of it, but, it's become something really big, a pop culture phenomenon for sure. And the Taylor story about a previous project editing his physical appearance, on his derriere. Like we hear women talk about that. Yes. I didn't know it was something that happened to guys and body hair, but alas, here we are.
They're going to give that poor kid a complex. Like why? Yeah. And then to not even tell him, you know, and I'm sure it was some like last minute network note or whatever, you know, studio note. And they didn't think to let him know, but yeah, of course he's going to have like, you know, he's going to be second guessing his booty.
Right. I'm second guessing mine, and I'm not even showing it to anyone. So like, what the heck? Oh, it's absurd. It's so crazy. But anyway, if folks have not seen that movie, I mean, look, it's 2 hours of your time, and it is a delight. And the two guys together are just they're fantastic. The movie it did get a PGA nomination. It's producers, so it is certainly in the mix. And there are always fewer TV movies than limited series, but they still get their own category. So it's definitely worth checking out on Amazon Prime Video. All right, folks, one more time, I'm going to give you that phone number so you can call in. You might have thoughts on Taylor and Nicholas's interview, or perhaps you have questions. Feel free to call in with those. That number one more time here today, 657-799-1566. All right. Well, that is it for this episode, our first of the season of The Awardist. Kristen, thanks for being here.
No problem. We're back.
We're back, and I'll have you back, of course, very, very soon. If all of you like what you are hearing here on The Awardist, please do follow, rate the podcast, and leave us an award-winning review on Apple Podcasts. And to keep the conversation with us going, you can follow Entertainment Weekly on all socials. We are at EW on X, formerly known as Twitter, and at Entertainment Weekly everywhere else. You can also tag me at Jared Hall. Kristen, you are at?
Kristen G. Baldwin.
There you go. All right, folks, we will see you back here next week. The Awardist is an Entertainment Weekly podcast hosted and produced by Jared Hall and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Thanks for listening.